Hi, this is Mac of Mac's List. Find Your Dream Job is presented by Mac's List, an online community where you can find free resources for your job search, plus online courses and books that help you advance your career. My latest book is called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. It's a reference guide for your career that covers all aspects of the job search, including expert advice in every chapter. You can get the first chapter for free by visiting maxlist.org/anywhere. This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Mac Pritchard, your host and publisher of Mac's List. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Becky Thomas and Jessica Black, from the Mac's List team. This week, we're talking about how to ask for the money and the opportunities you want. You do great work at your job. In fact, you exceed your performance goals, and clients compliment your results. But your good work doesn't lead to big pay raises or promotions. What are you doing wrong? Our guest expert this week is Kate White, author of the new book, The Gutsy Girl Handbook, Your Manifesto for Success. She says you can't rely on good work alone to get the money and the opportunities you want. She and I talk later in the show. To negotiate a great salary, you need to know what employers pay you for what you do. Becky has found an article with 8 online tools you can use to research salaries for your occupation. She tells us more in a moment. You receive a job offer and accept the employer's starting wage without negotiation. Now you're in the position, and the pay seems low based on the actual duties. Can you ask for a new salary, or must you wait until your annual review? That's our question of the week. It comes from Brooke Jacobs in Redmond, Oregon. Jessica shares her advice shortly. All right, as always, let's first check in with the Mac's List team. Now, Becky, you've, as always, have spent the past week exploring the internet on behalf of our listeners. We went into some detail, I think, in an episode a moment ago about a few weeks ago about all the gear and
oh yeah, so much mining of information throughout the internet. So
yeah,
been hard at work again this week.
Good,
that's right. It's a never ending exploration.
Yeah,
just 24/7. But what have you found in all of that poking around in the last week?
Well, since we're talking about money on this week's show, I pulled out a tool that you can use for salary research. So knowing your worth is a really huge part of building a successful career. So you really need to do research about what kind of salary you should ask for, what you should aim for, and what you should negotiate for. Whether you're looking for new work, negotiating a starting salary, or asking for a raise. You really have to know what your skills, experience, and expertise are worth to an employer, and there are a lot of factors to hone in on. You need to understand your professional market value within your industry, but also in your local city where you live, can vary a lot depending on your location, as well as your level of experience and your education. And in today's world, data is everywhere. Like talking about the internet, there's so much information out there. And you can access really good, solid salary data from a lot of different places. So you have absolutely no excuse for not preparing with good, solid research. So we've shared salary research guides on Mac's List before, and today I found another comprehensive research for finding good information and data out there on the internet, and I thought this one was good because it's more than just sort of finding comparable salaries. It's called the Top 8 Tools You Need to Use for Salary Research from the Job Network, which is a great website with resources for job seekers and employers alike. And this article outlines 8 well-respected tools to use to find out both what people like you are making out in the marketplace and also information on things like equal opportunity employment laws, fair pay. There are salary calculators and anonymous survey data from real professionals from like the government, as well as different anonymous surveys like Glassdoor and Payscale and things like that. So you know, there. I felt like this is a really comprehensive resource and a really great place to start if you're sort of thinking about your salary, whether you're job searching or looking to negotiate for a raise. Go to this resource and you'll find lots of places to start and get a really good picture of where you should be aiming your sort of salary range.
That's really interesting. I didn't know about that, but I love that because I love, we talk about Glassdoor and PayScale a lot, but I think this is a really good addition to being able to do more research and have more information about what's out there. That's great.
Yeah. Was there one of the 8 tools that stood out for you that you really liked?
I thought there was some information about the Equal Opportunity Employment mm-hmm. Act and sort of fair pay and what you can do if you think you're being underpaid or unfairly paid, especially with like the gender wage gap and things like that. I thought that was really interesting. And there was a lot of good information.
And what rights people have. That's great.
Yeah, and what to do, like how to find out if mm-hmm. your employer is paying you unfairly because mm-hmm. it's such a gray area a lot of times when you're currently employed and you don't know what your coworkers are making, but you sort of have an idea that you might be making less. It's like, what are you supposed to do?
Right.
So there's some good sort of hard tools to start to dig into that a little bit in that sort of difficult situation.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you.
Good. It sounds like a great resource, and it's especially timely given our conversation later in the show with Kate.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you, Becky. If you've got a suggestion for Becky and you want to get her out of the internet exploration business a little sooner, please write her. Her email address is becky@maxlist.org. Now let's turn to you, our listeners, and Jessica joins us to answer one of your questions. Jessica, what's in the MaxList mailbag this week?
Yeah, today we have a question from Brooke Jacobs, who wrote to us via email from Redmond, Oregon. And I'll share her question that she wrote in. 2 months ago, I accepted a job and naively accepted the employer's initial salary offer. Based on my understanding of the job, it seemed like a fair amount of money. Now that I'm fully in the job, I realize that the job is much more stressful and demanding than the employer originally let on. How long should I wait before I ask to readjust my salary to match the work I've done? Am I stuck until my 1-year review? So this is a great question from Brooke. I'm going to start by saying short answer, no. You do not have to wait until your 1-year review to address this. And I encourage you not to wait until your 1-year review. A year is a long time to wait if you feel like you're unfairly paid for the work that you're doing. So many organizations offer a 90-day review option. And even if this isn't ingrained in the process of your organization, I think it's still acceptable to bring this up as something with your supervisor. Ask for a meeting sort of around that time, around the 3-month, 90-day timeframe, because that's a good timeframe. After you've been in the job for a couple of months, you actually know what you're doing, what the responsibilities are. You have an understanding of what the job looks like, the day-to-day, things like that. So again, request that meeting with your supervisor and boss. Give a little bit of a heads up of just wanting to check in at a 90-day timeframe about your responsibilities and you know, ask for feedback about how you're doing, kind of just a check-in if you don't have normal check-ins with your supervisor in the first place. But in the meantime, compile a list of your accomplishments in this 90-day period and any additional responsibilities you've taken on that weren't listed in your job description during this period. So really identify, compile that list, gather that data about what you're doing, what additional things that you have taken on, just to be able to document, because you don't want to fly in that meeting without the preparation that you need to do to be able to make your case. So, and then also do some research online. If you know of job titles that would be similar to the work that you're doing, or do some research as well to see with these additional responsibilities that you've taken on, what that job title might be with the additional job responsibilities that you've taken on. And then look at what salaries are comparable in that space and what you quote unquote should be being compensated for, what the market rate is for the salaries of the work that you're doing. And so, again, use these facts and data to make your points and to reiterate, you know, your points that you're making with your employer to make your case that you deserve to be compensated for the work that you're doing. I think that oftentimes folks want to have an emotional conversation of just saying, I feel that I'm not being compensated, and that's very reasonable, and that's a great way to start it. But you also need to back that up if you want anything to happen, if you want actual, you know, change to happen. Backing that data up. And so Becky's resource that she just shared would be a really great place to look, but also just kind of Googling, finding out other salaries and things like that, and also talking to other people in the industry if you have connections within that industry doing similar work. I think that that's a great way to gather information as well. So, and then after you have this meeting where you've made your case with your employer, allow some time for your employer to review this, but make sure that you walk away from the meeting with concrete next steps. So, get another meeting on the books to revisit this conversation. Don't walk away just being like, okay, well, I'll just wait to hear from you, because you don't want to feel like you're badgering them into having the conversation or anything like that. But if you just leave the conversation with what are the next steps, or is there an appropriate amount of time, or what's the time frame that you need to be able to revisit this conversation and get that on the books right away. And lastly, I would say just know what you're asking for and what you're willing to quote unquote fight for. So know what you're worth and know kind of what your line in the sand is. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of really great resources out there, and I know Kate is going to talk about how to do some of this negotiation and asking for this type of money. So I think that will be a great resource, but there's a lot of information online as well. And I know we have some information on the MaxList website as well about negotiations and some previous podcast episodes as well. So those would be really good resources as well for kind of getting yourself prepared for that negotiation. But just knowing kind of what you'd be willing to accept and what you're not willing to accept, so that you know that as a baseline. What else would you guys say?
I think that's really comprehensive advice. I think that's a great plan for Brooke moving forward. And I definitely agree that you shouldn't wait and stay silent if you feel like you're being underpaid.
It's just going to build up and you're going to be angry.
Resentful. And that's never good. And I think it'll be important too for her to just sort of put herself in the employer's shoes. Like, her boss probably knows that she's overworked and is aware of it. And so your boss also wants to keep you happy. They don't want to hire somebody to replace you when you leave because you're being underpaid. So right. I think that it's worth sort of thinking through their thought, like your boss's thought process, and trying to align your message with sort of that idea too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of what we talk about for job seekers in interviews and things like that, of bringing the conversation back to how you're going to help your organization. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a great way to do it as well, of like, you know, I'm a great value and mm-hmm. I want to stay in this position, but I have too much on my plate and mm-hmm. I, you know.
Let's work out a plan to make it better. The only other thing I would say is sometimes like the employer might have like budgetary limitations.
Sure.
So think about some more creative asks, like if you want to ask for an extra week of vacation or something like that to help alleviate some of that stress, might be something else too.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I think both of your advice is spot on, and I would especially like to call out, Jessica, your suggestion about identifying next steps at the end mm-hmm. of that conversation. There's someone I worked with in Washington, D.C. when I was doing legislative work, who said, if you're meeting with an elected official or a staff person on Capitol Hill, you at the end of the meeting, you always want to identify next steps. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a failed meeting. And if there isn't a clear next steps that have been identified by both parties, it's not going to be productive. So
it's just going
to
get lost in the pile. You know, there's, especially with in this scenario with Brooke, It sounds like there's already a lot of work being done in the organization. And so I'm sure that things are it's hard to find time to meet anyway. And so if you just leave it to, we'll just decide that on that later, it's just not going to happen. So yeah, I think that's good advice as well.
And I also like the emphasis on thinking about the employer's needs. So Brooke may hear from her manager, well, I can't do that now. But one strategy she could consider, and you both touched on this, is drawing the manager out about upcoming problems or needs. Mm-hmm. And particularly if it's a problem that, if it's solved, is going to add to the company's bottom line, mm-hmm. I think the manager is going to be both grateful for Brooke's efforts in solving that problem and open to having a conversation about rewarding her financially for doing that as well.
Great. Yeah, that's good advice.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you, Jessica, and thank you, Brooke, for sending in your question. If you've got a question for Jessica, write her. Her address is jessica@maxlist.org. You can also call our listener line. That's area code 716-JOBTALK. Or post your question on the MaxList Facebook group. And if we use yours on the show, we'll send you a copy of Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment, and when we return, I'll talk with this week's guest expert, Kate White, about how to ask for the money and the opportunities you want. If you're listening to this show right now, there are two things I know about you. First, you're a fan of podcasts. Second, you're looking for tools and insights that can help you land a job and get ahead in your career. That's why I'm excited to announce MaxList's newest free resource, which was designed for people just like you. I just published the newest edition of my Top Career Podcast Guide. It's a directory of the best podcasts for finding a job that matters and building the career you want. This is my most comprehensive list ever. It features 78 great podcasts from around the world. From resume writing advice to salary negotiation tips, you'll find a great podcast that'll help you overcome any job search challenge. And that's in the 2018 Top Career Podcast Guide. Get your free copy today. Go to topcareerpodcast.com. Again, that website is topcareerpodcast.com. Now let's get back to our podcast. Now let's turn to this week's guest expert, Kate White. Kate White is the former editor-in-chief of 5 national magazines, including Cosmopolitan. She's also the New York Times bestselling author of several career books, including the upcoming The Gutsy Girl Handbook, Your Manifesto for Success. And Kate is the bestselling author of 12 mysteries and thrillers. She joins us today from New York City. Kate, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Our topic this week, as you know, is how to ask for the money and the opportunities you want. And this is a struggle for many people in the workplace, isn't it, Kate? Particularly women.
It really is. I certainly have focused on women in my new book, but men can have the issue too. Sometimes we're afraid to raise our hand for something because we fear being shot down.
So that's the fear that stops people from doing it. When you do see people ask for what they want, are there common mistakes that come up again and again that you see happen?
I think the first one, just to circle back to what we were just talking about, is assuming that if they want you, they're going to tap you and not raising your hand for it. I think that's the biggest mistake. I just saw something the other day. I heard someone talking about her policy in their company, and they did not offer jobs to people who'd come in for interviews unless they wrote a thank you note. And in a way, that's a microcosm. Basically, you've got to show you're hungry for something, because people don't want people to come on board with them who are in any way less than passionate about the opportunity. So the first thing is to just know you have to ask, even if it doesn't seem fair. Then I think it's really important to ask in a way that shows what you're going to do for them. That one mistake I used to see a lot of the people who were young, in particular, who worked for me, they would position it position and ask in terms of why they needed it. It was time for them to be promoted. Or one woman even said her husband had taken a lower paying job, so that's why she needed a raise. And when you're the boss, even if you're an empathetic boss, you're not really that interested in what's going on in their life or where, why they think they need it. You want to know what can they do for you. So whenever you ask, it's so important to bring it back to why this is good for your department, why it's good for your boss, what you're going to be able to do. And that's a big mistake I see both men and women making.
It's interesting you should bring up the salary question. I interviewed a candidate for a position in my company some years ago, and we were talking about the salary range, and she said, well, she needed to have a higher number because she was living in a rent-subsidized apartment in one city, and her rent was going to go up if she left that apartment. And so, and I sympathize. I mean, we all need to pay our bills, but salaries are, as you know, are based on budgets and profitability and revenue sources, not necessarily on the rent needs of the employees.
Right. Another thing, Mac, I see people doing is not understanding how important timing is. One of the most important things to understand when you're going to ask for a raise is to know that the budgets are set sometimes months in advance of when raises are given out. So you want to get on your boss's calendar weeks in advance to make your case. And you also have to understand that there's often a pool of money your boss has been given. And if she gives you a 3% raise, that might mean she can only give a 1% raise to somebody else. So you've really got to get in there and make your case before it's too late, before she's already worked it all out on paper and submitted it to her boss.
Well, I want to dig into that, Kate, because I know there are people who are listening who are eager to learn how to best negotiate either a good starting raise or a raise when you're doing an annual review or a promotion. But before we get there, let's just talk about the elephant in the living room here, which is, why isn't good work alone enough? Why won't your manager or your bosses notice that and offer you the promotions and the raises you think that good work qualifies you for?
Because good work often doesn't necessarily increase profitability, drive business, create buzz, the kinds of things that can matter in a really competitive field. I really believe you have to do more than what you've been told to do. You've got to go big or go home. You really have to come up with bold, gutsy, innovative, sometimes disruptive ideas that not only strengthen your strengths as in terms of your career, but are going to drive profitability and set you apart from the pack. I saw an interesting study lately that showed that the way we often get promoted is by dazzling a boss with glamour projects, like running a new team or representing your company at an industry event, or perhaps handling a project for a major client. And these are often, they're given more significantly to white men. And so regardless, you just have to raise your hand often for those kinds of projects rather than wait to be handed to those. So unfortunately, doing a good job and working your butt off and really having a fair amount of grit isn't enough. And the other thing is, bosses sometimes don't want to rock the boat in terms of budget. And they're going to do it if they're afraid they might lose you or make you unhappy. But if you're not saying anything, if you're not making noise, they're going to tell themselves, well, she seems happy or he seems happy, so I don't have to move the needle here.
Well, let's talk about salaries. And I know an important point in this process is when you get a job offer, and the starting salary that you accept is going to set the stage for the compensation you get later in that position.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
Yeah. And so how should people approach that, Kate? Should they take the first offer they get from a hiring manager?
I heard somebody really smart lately say, start on a good foot, take the first offer. I don't really believe that, because I've seen so many women in particular fail to negotiate their starting salary, and men fail to negotiate their starting salary too. Women do it in greater numbers, but still we both do it. And you're often leaving money on the table if you do that, because as a boss, I know that you're trying to get the person as reasonably as possible, because then you can save that money for something else. So you may discover that if they're happy with X amount, you're like, wow, good. I've got some more money in my pocket than I plan to have after this. So they are often lowballing you, and it's important to understand that and accept that they expect you in so many situations to negotiate. So do it. You start by doing your homework. Preparation is the key thing. Do your research. Discover the zone of possible agreement. What is their reservation point likely to be? What's your reservation point? So let's say you figure out that your reservation point is $60,000, just for argument's sake. You don't want to go below that because of your standard of living. And you do some research to discover that, wow, you think their reservation point might be 70,000, that they may be open to paying between 65 and 70. And you'd be happy with 68, but you'd love 70. Well, my best advice might be ask for 72. Go higher, because your research might not be perfect. And the worst that could happen is them saying, gee, that's more than we expect to pay. I think it's also important today to understand that a lot of negotiation experts recommend that you name the first number. It used to be that you let them name the number. But when you name the number, then you just seem more flexible if they're coming back to you. So name a number, say, you know, I'm looking for this amount based on my experience and my research about the field and my skill level, and then be quiet and hear what they have to say. And of course, you don't want to look like you're digging in your heels in some way, because you want to be able to negotiate. So if they come back and say, whoa, 72 is more than we were planning to pay, then you can be flexible sounding and say, well, I love the sound of the job. I'd love to work for you. I love the sound of this company. Can you, what were you thinking of? And that way you're letting them come back to you.
There are two things. I love this advice, and two things that stand out for me. It's one, that you're setting the range when you name that figure. And the second is that when the employer is saying, well, that's not what we were planning on spending, you're not coming up with another number as an alternative. You're letting them propose something.
Right. That's right. And not everyone agrees with this approach. There are, as I mentioned earlier, people who would say you don't want to start off on the wrong foot. But as a boss, I used to find that the people who negotiated, they annoyed me in the moment, Mac, but once they started and did a brilliant job, I didn't care. I respected them for negotiating. And I had fabulous luck as a negotiator, even though it scared my pants off. I did it, and it always paid off, because, as I said, they so often do have more. And if they don't, they'll tell you, and then you take it from there.
Well, I want to turn to opportunities, particularly promotions, Kate. But before we do that, any other negotiation tips you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think take a deep breath. Once it's their turn to come back to you, don't fill the vacuum and say, but of course I'd be willing to take less. You've got to be brave enough to hear them out. And if they say anything like, well, I'm going to have to check with my boss and get back to you, you may have a nervous night, but hang in there. But I would say in that case, leave them with a sense that you really want the job. So you say something, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you checking about getting a higher amount. As I said, I just want to repeat, I love the sound of this job. I think I could bring a lot to this company. And lastly, just the more you keep the discussion about their needs, not your needs, what you can do for them, the ideas you have that you would love to execute. It's got to be all about them and remind them of that.
Terrific. Well, let's talk about promotions. And what's your best advice there, Kate, about how to approach this subject with a manager or your employers in general?
Well, first I say, don't wait to be tapped. That's a common mistake people make. And I think women tend to make this sometimes. We think, oh, they know I'm good. They know I want it. They don't always know. They may have to be reminded. They don't know how hungry you are. In fact, I know this really hurt somebody who worked for me once, but I never gave a promotion to somebody who didn't come and ask for me. This was when a job opened up. Which brings me to something I just want to point out. A lot of people, when they're young, don't understand that companies often can't give someone a promotion just because they've been at the job for a while. They have to wait till a position opens up. So when a position opens up, you go ask for it, even if you think you're the most obvious choice in the world. Again, don't make it just about you. Like, I've been here 4 years and I've worked hard and I think it's my time. They don't care. They want to know, what are you going to do in this job to make us happier than the last person or as happy as the last person? Really show off. And I always recommend following up your presentation in person with something written. Reinforce what you shared in the meeting. Give them a written proposal of how you're going to run with this and really make them so happy they considered you.
I love that advice too, because whether you're doing sales, and I do a fair amount of that as a owner of a public relations agency, or it reminds me of my time working in politics for elected officials on campaigns. You've got to ask for the business or you got to ask for the vote.
Yeah.
and
you know, it's so true. I got a job once and I was pregnant and I just had my baby and my boss was giving me a really hard time about leaving at a reasonable hour. So a job came up to run a parenting magazine. And I thought, wow, they're not going to mind a good mommy in that job. They're going to want a good mommy. And so I applied for the job and I got through the headhunter round and then I was with a group of the top people. And I wanted that job so badly. And at the end, they said, any other questions? I said, no, but there is something I'd like to say. And I asked for the business. And I hadn't even heard that term yet. But after I started the job, having gotten it, the publisher said to me, we love the fact that you asked for the business. And really, people, they want you to ask for the business because it shows you're hungry and passionate.
Absolutely. And I see that employers tell me they're always impressed at the end of an interview when a job candidate asks for the job. And certainly when I'm doing sales calls for my public relations company, I always close the meeting by saying, you know, it may sound like a formality, but I'm going to ask you for the order. I would love to have
the
business.
That's great.
Yeah.
Love that.
Well, terrific. Well, in addition, we've talked about what to do when promotions or opportunities open up, but Kate, how can people create opportunities for themselves? What can they do instead of waiting to be picked, actually create something?
Oh, that's a good point, because sometimes you may be looking for that glamour project. I mentioned that earlier, the kind of projects that help get you promoted, like running a new team or representing your company at an industry event. You may not see that on the horizon. And then it's really great to step back and ask yourself, what's missing? What problem could I solve here? As an executive I know says, if you're not seeing a problem in your department, you're not looking hard enough. There's something. I mentioned this once in a speech I gave, and I got this great email from a woman who said, I was a young assistant in a PR firm, and I heard you say that. So I started asking, what's missing here? And she said, we did not have a crisis manual. And as you know, from being in that business, you need a manual that explains, what do you do when things really hit the fan. And she said she just wrote a crisis manual for them and they loved it. And then she did a few other things that weren't in her job description. They weren't on the horizon, but they were her asking what's missing. And she said, the next thing you knew, she was being promoted to associate and in this PR company. So ask yourself what's missing. What can you solve?
Great advice. Well, Kate, tell us what's next for you.
Well, I will be on the road a little bit. The Gutsy Girl Handbook came out this week, and I've started to do a fair number of speeches related to the book. I love so much going to companies and conferences, particularly geared towards women, I have to say, though men can find this advice useful as well, because even guys sometimes have the good girl gland where you just feel like you're hesitating because you're a little nervous about how it will play out if you do ask or you do take that step. And so I'll be speaking a lot on the road at different conferences and companies, and I enjoy that. And that's how I'll be spending the rest of my spring and early summer.
Well, terrific. I know people can learn more about you and your book and your upcoming speaking engagements by visiting your website. That's katewhitespeaks.com, as well as your Twitter account. Great. We'll include links to both your Twitter account and your website in our show notes. Kate, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much, Mac.
So we're back in the studio with Becky and Jessica. What are some of your thoughts about my conversation with Kate?
I thought it was great. I thought that she had some insightful points from a manager's perspective, from the boss's perspective. It's like when an employee is doing hard work and trying to get noticed for the work that they're doing, your boss might not notice that. And it's up to you to sort of raise your hand, like she said, and ask for the projects and ask for the opportunities and really build a case for the raise that you want, things like that. I think it was really sort of like clear inspiration for like, here's what you can do to really show your boss what you can do and why you deserve more money. And yeah, I thought it was really, really helpful.
I really liked that too. That a lot of that resonated with me as well. Of her comment about don't wait for the opportunities to come to you.
Yeah,
you need to identify what your goals are and make those known to your supervisor or boss, mm-hmm. and then ask for them. I mean, remind them. Ask for them when they're presented, or identify some ways that there is room for growth in the organization and make that known to your boss of, here's a way that we can improve our organization or our system or whatever, and say, I'll lead that and mm-hmm. I'll put that together, whatever it is.
Yeah. That like advice of ask what's missing.
Right.
And go do it.
Yeah. But yeah. I really liked, her reiteration. I am following up on what you were saying about not waiting to be asked, or not waiting to be called on. I think, mm-hmm. Our whole lives we've been conditioned to just put our hand up and wait to be called upon. And in the business world and in your organizations, that's it. Kind of flips it on its head. There is still some room for that. I mean, you don't want to just kind of
overstep or
take over and pretend that you're the one in charge when you're not, because it is still a team collaboration and you're part of a group leading the charge. But I think that knowing what you want and asking for it is really important. And that's okay. And it's encouraged, and it's not something that, that you have to sort of just be meek, because the people who are going to ask for it are going to get those opportunities. And so you sort of have to, mm-hmm. you sort of have to, you don't always have to be loud about it, but you can quietly have conversations with your boss if you don't prefer to make that public. I think that that is, you know, personality styles differ where not everybody is going to want to, you know, make their goals and desires public and speak up in front of people. And that's okay too. But as long as you are having those conversations, anyway, yeah, I made a lot of notes. I saw you taking notes.
Yeah.
She made a lot of really excellent points, and I think it's good. And I liked her point about it's not just women that can use this. I think a lot of times that is the case where women need it a little bit more, but I liked her point about men struggle with it as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great advice for everyone.
Agreed. And I too second her point that you were sharing, Jessica, about the importance of not waiting to be picked. If you want something, tell the people who can make it happen that that is indeed what you want. They may say no,
right,
but they're not telepathic. So
right.
You need to communicate it. And as you both know, I got an analytical bent, so I loved that very concrete process she laid out for negotiation and the different steps.
Mm-hmm. That was smart.
Yeah. And there, you can take whole courses and read books about how to do everything she just said in a few paragraphs. Mm-hmm. But the point here is that there is a process. You can learn how to do it, and it takes some effort. But once you learn how to do it, your salary is going to go up, and you're going to have much more success getting promotions and raises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you both, and thank you, Kate, for joining us, and you, our listeners, for downloading today's episode of Find Your Dream Job. Now, if you enjoyed Find Your Dream Job and you're looking for more great career podcasts, be sure to check out our 2018 Top Career Podcast Guide. You'll discover 78 shows that can help you get hired. Get your free copy of the Top Career Podcast today. Go to topcareerpodcasts.com. And join us next Wednesday. Our special guest will be Joey Price. He'll explain how to make the most of your first 90 days on the job. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.